Hi, I'm Logan. You're listening to season two of Spooks, Creeps, and Assorted Devilry. Hope you enjoy the show.
Hey creeps, I'm Laura, and with me tonight I have my amazing co-host, Rick.
Hi. That's all you get from me
Rick,
tonight.
who's on the show tonight?
We have the one and only Bergmaster 5000, Mr. Steve Berg. Welcome
Hell
aboard,
yeah.
buddy.
Thank you for
Hell
having me.
yeah.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Super happy to be here. Thanks for
Round
having
of
me.
applause. Woo!
Yeah, everyone,
Insert whoever's
raise the
editing
roof,
this,
please.
insert applause.
Yes.
I need a soundboard. I almost bought a soundboard for that reason. I should do it.
They would be fun, but I feel like with the soundboard, at least myself, it would just be like a cacophony of like annoying sounds the whole time. Could be like, I wouldn't be able to stop, you know.
I'd
Do
do
the
the pit
yeah.
bull air horn thing constantly.
Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba.
Exactly.
Yeah, I would too. I have before and it was quickly taken away from me. So
I can see that. I've
yeah.
had that happen as well, so I
I'm a
sympathize.
child.
Preaching to the choir, bud.
So, Rick, what has Steve done? Can you tell us? What does he do?
he's
Who is he?
he he
Why
is
is he here?
a let's say he's comedian, writer, actor, paranormal
Podcaster?
enthusiast, podcaster. Recently got into the podcasting gig. Great show, by the way. I love all the
Thank
conversations. You're
you. I
welcome.
appreciate it.
Yeah. But
Tell us about the podcast, Steve.
I'd love to. It's called High Strangeness.
Where'd you
That's
come up with that name? So original.
well, it's HI comma strangeness, which come on, give me a little originality points. But yeah, I know I felt like, you know, it was a title that encompassed how I see all this phenomenon we'd love to talk about as sort of like kind of one like sea of weirdness that manifests itself in different ways.
There
Sometimes
we
it's
go.
a cryptid, sometimes it's your dead granny. Sometimes it looks like UFOs from another planet, but is it really those things?
Everything is connected.
Everything. I mean, you know, it. I would agree with that.
Well, it's like there's that grand unifying paranormal thing everybody talks
Right,
about.
right, right. Yeah, I mean, it's that's an interesting notion, but I even wonder if it's even like more, either more complex or more simple than that. Like, I really like the John Keel idea of a super spectrum, and that just. There's this like level of like reality or another world, like an onion right above us that just blips in and out some weird stuff from time to time. Then boom, it vanishes and usually leaves a weird smell.
Just like Rich.
Exactly. Thank you. I was going to say that. You beat me to it. That's what I get for eating Taco Bell.
That podcast or the podcast I do is basically just talking about all this stuff, doing thought experiments, interviewing people in the field, and kind of some actors and comedian buddies, you know, pop up from time to time. And I like to tell about w the weird stuff that's happened where they're from, because a lot of times my friends,
They don't know. They don't
they don't
care.
know about this stuff. I mean, like, you know, I think more people care than people think, but like they often don't know that, you know, there was like a little demon that lived in a barn, you know, 18 miles away from where they grew
Right.
up.
Nice.
Funny story. So my
Folklore, at least.
dad's, yeah, so my dad's family's from West Virginia. I spent
Oh, nice.
summers there as a kid in the 90s. Not once did anybody tell me about Mothman, Grafton Monster, Flatwoods. And as a result, I no longer talk to any of them. They're all dead,
Yeah.
but
Oh, yeah. Well, you could
like
commune with them, perhaps, you know,
I could.
through the super spectrum.
Exactly.
That's awesome. I think West Virginia is one of the most beautiful states I've ever seen. It's just, I don't think I've ever seen a location in the entire world that's more tree covered.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
The
Yeah.
most dense forest I've ever seen.
I almost blew out the transmission on my truck when we drove down through it last year because of the hills, you know? Don't use cruise control on hills. That's a horrible idea.
No, that's gonna, you're gonna be all over the place.
Yeah, I was.
Gear wise.
Exactly.
So, Steve, how did you get into the weird strangeness stuff? Was that something since you were little or as you got older?
It's weird because I've been asked this kind of a lot recently, and I think like I didn't grow up with any religion in my household. So
Nice.
from a very young age, I think like, you know, naturally humans want to gravitate towards some kind of like other as like a kind of a security blanket or whatever you want to call it. But I don't know. I just remember, I don't really remember a time in my life where I wasn't interested in like, you know, UFOs, Bigfoot, ghosts, spontaneous human combustion, ghost ships, apports, palmistry. You know, like I've just been a real weird kid. And my mom was a school teacher, and she just wanted me to read. And so she would buy me all these books, and just she's like, well, he's reading, you know, even though I was going like over to the occult book section at Walden Books at 9 years old, you know, like hanging out in the new age bookstores, you know. Yeah. So, but you know, they were like pretty, they didn't really care as long as I was like reading and stuff. And I, you know, didn't become too weird, I guess.
Yeah.
But that's good. They were supportive of my, you know, their weird little son.
Yeah. And look what it made of you now.
Yeah. Whoops.
I think about that. Like, I think about my mother making all of these decisions as I was a child and if she regrets them or not. So we'll see if we're in the same.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure they're like, well, he's not in jail or dead. So, you know, did something right.
For my family, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Set the bar low.
Mm-hmm.
Just like this podcast.
Yep. Never disappointed.
I won't have that. I won't have that kind of talk.
I appreciate your support.
Mm-hmm.
We need some positivity here.
Yeah. Me and Rick, we both, I mean, we're the same age, but we both grew up like reading books at like 8 or 9 about all that stuff. And then us watching like Unsolved Mysteries and In Search Of, like same that's here. How, you know, it got started for us. And then I think I told you in person, my mom saw a pterosaur in Texas in 1976. So that's what got me into all the weirdness too.
I mean, that is so, that was it. You said Texas, you said?
Yeah.
Where in Texas?
It was in Nixon, Texas, like right outside San Antonio.
So can you like, you probably talked about it on the show and now I'm not trying to turn the tables, but explain that sighting to me, that encounter a little bit.
Okay. It's not like a long story. So my mom and her three friends were in a Volkswagen convertible Beetle driving from Nixon, Texas to San Antonio. It was like dusk. They're on like this desolate country road, music's blasting. They're just driving along, talking. All of a sudden they see a big shadow covering the road over them. They look up and they just see a dark pterosaur gliding over them and into the tree line. And that was it.
That's awesome.
And like, you know, we live near Chicago, so we've gone to the Field Museum. Have you been to the Field Museum before?
No.
It's like the natural history. So they have dinosaurs and they have a large selection of They have tons of like stuffed birds. And so I'm like, Mom, like, is it the sandhill crane? Is it, you know, the California condor?
It's a barred
owl. She's like, no, it was the pterosaur that's hanging, you know, above us. So I'm like, okay, that's what she saw. But
like
1976 is when everyone saw them in that area.
But it wasn't a humanoid and it wasn't like the Thunderbird where it looked like a giant bird. It looked
like a
dinosaur.
Yeah, a dinosaur.
That is so cool. Wow.
So that's what got me into it.
So
I've
become a fan of the whole time slip thing as of late.
Yeah,
and I feel like that's a great explanation for this kind of sighting because obviously we're not coming across pteranodons and pterodactyls anymore, but to see them like that, it's got to be something wonky with time.
It's as good an answer as any, isn't it? You know, I think about the time thing because that is something with, you know, these Freudian studies that is very common, you know, with UFOs, there's missing time. I think like, you know, I've heard multiple cases when people are like, you know, interacting with apparitions and stuff, they'll be like, whoa, like I lost a lot of time. So like orbs of light, there's these patterns and motifs that keep on showing up. And sometimes I wonder if just being in the proximity of whatever the phenomenon is, because maybe it doesn't operate on the same sort of like reality and time that we experience as humans, that we are experiencing its time. And it's just like all like, blah, 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 like crazy and like absurd and surreal. I mean, who knows? It's so fun to think about though, because that's definitely something you know, we've heard about for many, many years now.
Yeah.
Right.
Ooh, that was a lot of dead air, man.
Yeah.
Somebody's that's the fired. Longest. that's the longest we've ever had.
So. Yeah. That was nice. That's well, weird. It's nice to, you know, reset a little bit.
Oh, it was peaceful.
Yeah.
I feel complete.
Are you good now? Are we ending this?
I think we're good.
That is
it over?
That was quick.
thanks for joining.
Yeah, sure.
Have you had any weird experiences yourself?
You know, unfortunately, not really. You know, nothing that is like confirmational that I couldn't like rule out.
Yeah.
You know, like I am one of those people who has like tried to put myself in the position to experience it by going to weird places or you know, doing that kind of stuff, but I feel like it's close.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm almost there. I can feel it, you know, I can taste it.
Well, you're open to it. So that's, from my understanding, that's half the battle.
That is.
Like I was a devout skeptic.
Right.
For the longest time. And over the last, you know, year and change or more, I've started opening up a little bit to stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't experienced anything, but I'm open to it now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think skepticism and open-mindedness can really work. I think it's a wonderful combination, especially when you're delving into these fields, you know, mm-hmm. because I am like way more skeptical than I think people would realize. But I use skepticism and my open-mindedness to weird occurrences to kind of balance themselves out. Because I feel like if you're too far in either camp, it's hard to learn and progress, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like being skeptical is great, but I feel like you also need to be open-minded to things being so weird and so strange, yeah. You know? So.
Yeah. No, it's good because if you're shut off to it, you're immediately debunking things. That's just a sour way to go through life.
I agree.
And I was that
That's
jerk.
That's how you were. Yeah.
I was that jerk and I'll admit it now.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And it's what's really changed me is having conversations with people who've experienced, you know, Bigfoot or UFOs or ghosts like that.
Right.
People who have seen these things and experienced them, I can't disregard their experiences anymore. Mm-hmm. So that means something. So that to me, allows these other things to exist in the universe now.
Yeah, I hear you, Rick. It's because for me, it's like a lot. I now, like when I moved out of LA back to Omaha, I had, you know, because of the pandemic and strikes, I've had like extra time on my hands. And I have been kind of like talking to a lot of witnesses locally in Eastern Nebraska. And some, there are probably half the people I'm like, I feel like they're reaching out to me just because they want to interact with another human. And like maybe they're, you know, maybe it's, but I'm not, if something about it doesn't seem like all, super genuine to me. But there are other times where I'm convinced this person believes exactly what they're telling me. Now, whether it happened, I don't know. But like, I think they believe in what they're telling me. And to me, that's interesting enough for me to pay attention to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what's something that is so weird that you just can't even wrap your mind around?
Like, man, all of it. Well, I guess, well, I will use UFOs just as an example, because I feel like maybe that's what I've read about the most and was probably my gateway drug into getting into all this stuff.
Okay.
You know, very intensely with UFOs. You know, when you read like a book like Passport to Begonia by, you know, Jacques Vallée, or Operation Trojan Horse by John Keel, you quickly realize that this phenomenon of objects flying in the sky and occupants getting out and interacting with humans has been going on for thousands of years, really a long, long time. And there's really wonderful documentation. But the most interesting part of that to me is that the phenomenon is changing. Like there's a, you know, if you read, The Secret Commonwealth, which is a book about like fairy lore in Ireland, which is a highly recommended if you're into any kind of high strangeness. But if you substituted the fairy lore and just put the word alien and UFO in there, they're really talking about the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
These experiences, the patterns, the motifs that over and over again present themselves to me are no different than what we describe 21st century UFOs. It's just as we evolve, this phenomenon changes. And, you know, to kind of jump in time from the fairy lore, you could go all the way to the late 1800s in Illinois, Kansas, Iowa, Nebraska, and the Bay Area, but especially in that Midwest, they were seeing flying airships.
Yep. I'm glad like you crazy, went there. That's
right? Where I was going. And in Omaha, where I'm from, actually, not to brag, but one of the biggest mass sightings was almost 600 people. It was over 500 people. In downtown Omaha, saw a flying submarine with like searchlights.
What year was this?
1897.
Okay.
And that's in the, like, I've even like talked to the people at the Omaha Historical Society. Like, yeah, here's the newspaper article. Here's the original like story that was written about it in 1901. And like, it was just a thing. People didn't know what to do with it. But, you know, and then you jump to 1945, Kenneth Arnold flying over, you know, Washington, and he sees a fleet of crafts. But what's interesting about that is that he described seeing seven delta-shaped objects. And then when he talked to the reporter, he said, I saw these Delta-shaped objects that skipped across the air like a saucer. Mm-hmm. Then the reporter goes, you know what sounds good? Flying saucer. Man sees flying saucer. And then guess what? Days later, and for 50 years, people see flying saucers. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like the phenomenon conformed to what we wanted to see. And, you know, this is also coincided with us like wanting to go to space and building a nuclear bomb. And so I feel like the easiest box for us to put it in was aliens from another planet, you know? So, but that I feel like a lot of times this phenomenon is very self-negating. Once you think it's something, it's going to change.
Right.
So I kind of wonder if we're on the precipice of watching it change right now, which is exciting.
Yeah,
we do, right?
I'm excited. Like, yeah. I'm genuinely excited when I see these UAP hearings, the open conversation about it, all the whistleblowers who are coming out, you know, Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp with their podcast talking about everything they've encountered. Like, it is exciting. I think we are opening up to it as a nation, at least, if not the world. So I get like goosebumps and chills because that little 8-year-old Rick was like, are aliens real?
Yeah. You know,
32 years later is like, maybe.
Right.
The government's acknowledging some of this.
So, yeah, they are. I carry a very large lump of salt when it comes to like the disclosure thing, just because they've been saying the same narrative since Donald Kehoe in the 1950s, who was a colonel in the army. But they've been talking about crashed wreckage, crash retrieval teams. Then back in the 1980s, Rick Doty, who worked for the Office of Naval Intelligence, who we now know was feeding the UFO community false information.
He's a disinformation agent.
Yeah. He is. The Dulce base thing came from him. That's totally fake.
Right.
Area 51 housing flying saucers. I personally feel it was hiding a drone program and so on and so forth. So like in terms of these congressional hearings, I think it's exciting and neat that they're talking about it on C-SPAN. I mean, wow, I never thought I'd see it today, right?
Right.
But these are the exact same stories. And what will come out of it? My guess is absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And UFOs will UFOs will go right back into marginalia, maybe where they belong. Because like I feel like if we're waiting around for a congressman, you know, to tell us what UFOs are and represent, we're going to be waiting a long time. And even if when they tell us, how many people are really going to believe them? You know, like, unless they show us something so undeniable. But even then, what does that
mean? You can't, yeah.
You can't anymore.
So Photoshopped, it's AI.
It's a really tough thing. And that's part of the really frustrating thing for a lot of people about UFOs is that just when you think you're close, it's such a trickster. Mm-hmm. But that's part of the fun. It's part of the mystery. I've been looking at this stuff for so long that I don't think we'll ever have an inkling what it means and what it represents. But I'm so okay with that because the mystery is wonderful.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
So what about cryptids? How'd you get into that?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, cryptids are part and parcel with all this stuff. It's funny. I've always loved Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, you know, flying wing, humanoids, Mothman. They're wonderful. But I feel like for a long time, I kind of was just focusing on UFOs because this sounds like so dumb, but like Bigfoot stopped being weird enough for me. You know, like when, you know, and like when I think, you know, Bigfoot, when it was just the kind of flesh and blood idea of Bigfoot, that there's this missing link ape running around that we haven't discovered yet. Mm-hmm. I that's not something I really, I guess, believe in or, you know, think is possible.
Aww.
But I do. No. Don't say, I think once. In the last 10 years, like Timothy Renner and Joshua Cutchin have released these wonderful books called, Where the Footprints End.
Yep.
But they start pointing out all the patterns and paranormality of Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. Orbs of light being seen, Bigfoot being seen in conjunction with UFOs.
It's a Stan Gordon kind of thing.
Buddy, yeah. You just said the magic word. I'm a human. You know, really, even before Cutchin and Renner. Yeah. Stan Gordon's work was the thing that got me excited about Bigfoot again. Because once I was like, oh, Bigfoot's just like UFOs and ghosts and all the phenomena. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, I'm back on Bigfoot, baby. You know, and now I never turned back because sure, there could be a flesh and blood Bigfoot. I like, what do I know? It just, to me, I don't see how it's possible we haven't found any like concrete remains or a
That's
body.
That's my hang up. Yeah.
I mean, even nowadays with I just don't see how it's possible. But I will say, what do I know? I'm an idiot. I'm just a dumb actor. So, but the paranormality aspect of it to me feels like it's more exciting, but it's a more interesting fit because it does elicit the same patterns and motifs as ghosts and UFOs and a lot of other high strangeness. Yeah. So that kind of tells me it's something we should pay attention to. So I'm all for paranormal cryptids, my man.
Well, so personally, I'm offended by the whole paranormal Bigfoot thing, but I won't hold it against you.
No, it's okay. So,
yeah, no,
hold it against
them. I'm joking. Yeah. I'm very much a flesh and blood guy, and I'm the Joker who bought a dash cam because Cliff Berrickman says I should probably have one.
Yes.
You know, just so I can see Bigfoot crossing roads, you know?
Great.
That's what's exciting to me, but I'm not dismissing the paranormal Bigfoot. I don't dismiss anything anymore.
It could be both.
Right.
You know, I mean, like the phenomenon is known to mimic things and have doppelgangers appear where someone's like, hey, Laura, I saw you at the mall today. You're like, what? I was in Iowa. You know, like, I mean, that those are like common things that have been happening for a long time.
Yeah.
So I if there is a flesh and blood Bigfoot, what an idea that I like or find entertaining is that maybe it exists in the Pacific Northwest. But then east of the Rockies, there was someone who said east of the Rockies, cryptids are from the Goblin universe.
Oh, yeah. All the caves.
And someone said that in the 1970s. And I was like, I love that. And so, you know, maybe like whatever we see in Ohio, southern Pennsylvania, Illinois, Nebraska, Iowa, Missouri, maybe that is like, you know, 3D printing, paranormally speaking, of a real animal. Who knows? It's all on the table as far as I'm concerned.
Right. It's a good way to come into it now.
Yeah. Rick, I think this is a good segue to ask all your questions.
Okay. Well, so Steve, one of the things I like is to ask, and you can expound on it if you want.
Sure.
You can tell me true or false. You can say whatever you want, but I'd like to ask people's opinions of different cryptids.
I love this already.
So we've already talked about Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah.
What's your take on that?
Are they eels? Is it sturgeon?
Or is it kangaroos?
Like, do I feel like do I think there's something in there that's very large, or do I think it's something anomalous that we don't know about?
Anomalous.
Oh boy.
Is it the ghost of a plesiosaur?
I'm going to say it's not, and it's something mundane.
That was the correct answer.
I don't want it to be that pain exactly. me to say, you know, but well, I don't.
Well, you're probably like me where Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster were your two gateway cryptids.
Yeah.
So those are the ones you hold up above all else.
Yeah.
And to just flat out know in my heart that Loch Ness Monster is just eels or sturgeon or Welsh catfish. Like that's just, it's kind of heartbreaking, but it's a better place, I think, to live in the world if you know
it,
that.
It is, but I will say, I am kind of hot on the notion that with our collective unconscious, like kind of in a Carl Jungian way, if enough people believe something, that it may be able to, something might manifest.
Oh.
That looks like what people believe. So if enough people believe, like even like
the Tulpa.
Yeah, kind of like, like it, exactly. Like, you know, it's a collective unconscious created Tulpa or egregore.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I'm just open to the idea. So I'm not like, I say I don't think Loch Ness is anomalous, but my little like PS to that would be, or maybe a Tulpa.
the one, like, I love the idea of Tulpas. The one thing I keep getting hung up on is if Tulpas or egregores were real, so to speak, we'd see Santa Claus every year.
But people do every year.
Yeah. I know, and I remember when I was a kid, there was a Rescue 911 around Christmas where they were talking about Santa delivering a baby. I remember those things, but it's you'd feel like you'd see it more or hear it more.
Yeah, so yeah. That might be so crazy that people are like, I maybe should not tell my boss that at work. You know, like,
that's a fair point because a lot of even people who think they saw Bigfoot in the woods don't say anything because they don't want to be ridiculed.
So, I wouldn't report it. The last thing I would do if I had a dramatic like UFO or Bigfoot encounter, I would maybe like tell y'all, maybe not on air, but I would tell like, people I know, colleagues in this field, but I would not report it to BFRO or MUFON or like call the local news or put it on Facebook. Absolutely right. Not. You know, like I really wouldn't. Like, and when, so like, I think of the sightings we know of, like, you know, BFRO, for example, the Bigfoot Research Organization, mm-hmm. they have some really good sightings. But in the state of Nebraska, I know of like so many more that are maybe a little too weird for that site. And because a lot of times, you know, with like MUFON, they are really focused on kind of like being taken seriously and legitimately. And mm-hmm. so a lot of times they leave out the weird stuff. And I know mm-hmm. a couple of people who are in BFRO and are investigators. And they tell me, they're like, yeah, if we get reports of orbs of light or like weird poltergeist activity around this thing, we are told to leave it out or not document the case.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And I don't think that's, so if they want to do good science, that is the opposite of good science, is leaving out data. So
mm-hmm. No, you're absolutely right. I've heard that about MUFON too, where they just leave out the things they find convenient. Yeah. Yep.
I had an egg with a MUFON investigator last week, a real nice egg. And, but she was telling me the exact same thing.
You shared an egg.
We shared an egg.
We had little ice cream spoons.
Yeah, no, it was great. It was great. You have an egg.
At least trying times. All right. Well, let's go stateside.
I love it.
Let's talk about Thunderbirds. What's your take on Thunderbirds?
I love them.
Yeah,
I love them. I mean, there's, you know, Ivan T. Sanderson, who was the a colleague of John Keel's back in the 60s and 70s and a prolific writer on cryptids and underwater UFOs. He was kind of the dude who I think probably wrote and looked into Thunderbirds, at least that I know of. Mm-hmm. And there was this rumor going around where he said he saw the most compelling picture. And I think this is a story, but he didn't own it. And the witness who owned it like died, and somehow the picture got lost. But there's always these rumors that people are we feel like we know where the picture is now. But he really thought there was something to it. And if you go to, you know, some indigenous people's culture, the Thunderbird, like Bigfoot, is talked about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, like sort of accepted into either their folklore or into their kind of culture and reality. Mm-hmm. So
I mean, there is proof that there were big birds. Yeah. Like living, you know, so I don't know
what Quetzalcoatlodon or whatever.
Right. So while unless there, I might be wrong about this, but as far as I know, there's no real compelling evidence of Thunderbirds. I'm going to say, yes, I think they're real because one, I love them. And two, why not?
It's a good answer. It's a good answer.
Thank you.
Usually I would tell you if you're right or wrong, but I'll say it's a good answer this time.
Yeah, he's so keeping score.
Thank you. You're doing all right so far.
Thank you.
I'm a big fan of lake monsters. What do you think? Yeah. I think there's a difference between Loch Ness and Lake Champlain. Mm-hmm. What do you think about Champ?
Love Champ, first off. You know, as far as I know, there's nothing really like that I'm like, whoa, that is a good piece of video or, you know, some good data on it. So, I mean, I guess I kind of take a witness's word for it in terms of that, but I love it as folklore.
Yeah.
But I don't know of anything that would make me say I'm a Champ believer, but I love Champ.
Okay.
So I'm kind of like, maybe here's a pattern with me, maybe that's emerging, is that I love folklore so much. So because I don't necessarily quote unquote believe in something, I kind of try to take belief out of it, because with all this stuff, I have zero evidence and zero proof. Mm-hmm. But I think there's something I'm romantic about it. And I definitely think there is something too about all these things. Yeah. But I don't know individually what's real and what's not. But Champ, I'm gonna go with yes.
Good answer. Yeah, the thing that does it for me is the echolocation recorded in Lake Champlain. So
I don't know about that.
Yeah, they've got echolocation on tape inside the lake. So it's either like an ancient whale or, you know, like a dolphin of some type.
Is that newish?
It's within the last decade, I'm sure.
Dog, I'm going to go look that up after this.
Yeah.
That's hot.
Yeah, Google that. That's it might have been in Alex Petikov's On the Trail of Champ. If you saw that, look that up. I'm sure it's on.
I will.
On Small Town Monsters YouTube.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen that one. I will. I'm going to watch that tonight and play Hearthstone on my phone.
There we go.
My night is made.
You're a partying. Jeez.
I'm a wild man, Rick.
Calm down, Steve.
I know. Jeez. You got a problem, man. You're too much fun.
Oh, that's what everybody said about you, honestly. Yeah. Well, okay. Next one. This is a twofer.
I love it.
So the Chupacabra. There's Puerto Rican Chupacabra. Then yep. there's the Texas Terror Dog.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
What are your thoughts on those?
I'm down with it. I'm down with it. I obviously love them. But I will say, you know, it's you. So there's been a couple reports in eastern Nebraska of a 3 foot tall, kind of like Ewoky, Pudgewocky type thing.
Oh, nice.
And sometimes you hear reports of chupacabras being bipedal and walking on two yeah. feet, right? And the idea of the chupacabra, like when you see like artist renderings of it, it's kind of all over the place.
Mm. Yeah. Kangaroo like, and then,
right.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So I think there is some, I love the idea and I'm definitely open to the idea of some kind of like little creature that does terrorize livestock. So I'm going to go with yes on the chupacabra. Right.
That's me. Okay. I'm small. I'm the little creature. That's
good. That would be amazing if you were responsible for all this.
You, now that I look at you, yeah, you kind of look like a Texas Terror Dog. Yeah,
I see it. Well, I did when I met, you know, I met you in Van Meter. You were like gnawing on a squirrel, you know.
Don't tell people this. Yeah,
sorry. Did they let you on the airplane with the squirrel, Laura? Oh, wait, you drove.
I drove.
Yeah,
that's drove why she this. Drove.
Yeah. There's certain things you can't check at the airport.
Yeah. Squirrel. She had a whole collection of Iowa livestock she was bringing back to Illinois with her.
Oh, man. Yeah. Okay, that's a good answer. I'll accept it. Let's go with a big one, and we'll probably make that one the last one before we run into Laura's stuff here.
Okay.
Let's go with Mr. John Keel's Mothman.
Ooh.
Yep. Yeah. Yes.
Love
good
it.
Answer. Good yes. answer.
But you want to know something interesting?
Yeah.
Like if you've read the Mothman prophecies and kind of yep. understand all the phenomenon that was going on at the time, I by far find the Mothman the least exciting thing of what was happening.
Right. Yeah.
I think the Mothman was almost just like this, like, I mean, well, I think there's definitely something to it. But I think Mothman was a symptom of something greater. I mean, there was all the things that were going on with like an Indrid Cold and like these Men in Black and these dramatic UFO sightings.
Yep.
I mean, hell yes. It's just one of the greatest flaps, you know, in history that I know of. I've read that book so many times. It's like a comfort read to me where I'll just like pick it up and devour it every once in a while. And it excites me to no end.
I did the same thing. The very first time I read it, I flew through it. Like it was incredibly engaging. And my wife, her only knowledge of the Mothman was from the Mothman Prophecies film. So she had no idea about the crazy batshit stuff going on around that. And, you know, I just listened to the Mothboys interview with Mark Pellington, the director.
Yeah.
And they were talking like if they had tried to put all of that stuff from the book in the movie, it would have been a mess and no one would have understood anything.
Right.
Yeah. It's just it's insane how much was happening there. Like same thing with Skinwalker Ranch. Like there's so many things going on there.
Yeah. I tried to make a movie about Skinwalker Ranch in 2010, or I did make a movie about Skinwalker Ranch with I co-directed it.
Yeah.
But we ran into the problem of like the original script that I wrote with my friend. We like turned it into the finance and he's like, dude, you got way too much stuff going on. Yep. And I'm like, yeah, fair enough. And so we kept on paring it down because, and that's the thing about, you know, when you have these kind of thin areas or window areas or these flap areas, is that it's not just one thing we're dealing with. We're dealing with so much weirdness that I don't think art yet. I will say season 3 of Twin Peaks, I think is the closest anyone will ever come to representing what this stuff all is and means and feels like. But aside from that, I feel like in a movie, in a 2-hour movie, it is impossible to represent, you know, accurately.
Yeah, it's insane. Now you've got me thinking David Lynch is like a Man in Black or something, or Andrew Cole.
Well, he's my favorite artist of all time. And I just think he's tapped into something. And because when I watch like season 3 of Twin Peaks, or even when I watched Twin Peaks originally as a kid, I felt initiated into, I felt like I was having a high strange experience.
Yeah.
Like the world around me and the atmosphere felt weird. And like, I felt like I was like in a weird bubble of unreality.
You know? Yeah.
It puts you into a certain mindset that's hard to get out of.
Yeah.
It's like if you read a novel that is so striking like that, you think about it for a week afterwards. Yeah, Twin Peaks is exactly the same
way. Totally,
It changes your worldview in a way, at least temporarily.
Definitely temporary. But what it did for me, it made me overnight like, I mean, I'd already been into like the paranormal and UFOs and stuff, but when I saw Twin Peaks, I knew I wanted to like be in the movie business. I was like, it changed my whole trajectory in life. Like, I became a kid who was like really into sports and like, you know, that kind of jazz. And then I became a kid who was into punk and punk culture and got bigger into
UFO. Rick hates punk. Don't even mention it.
That's fine. That's fine.
I said I just like punk. There's a difference. Yeah. Hate means I care. Yeah, dislike means I don't care.
Okay.
I think you're right about that. but yeah, it did change my whole like attitude and mindset, where I became really obsessed with counterculture and kind of marginalized art and outsider art, and also heavier into high strangeness. So it really had like this massive impact on me, and still does to this day. It's kind of my touchstone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we all have those formative shows. Mm-hmm. Like for me, I think it was X-Files. Since I'm 40, so I was 10 when the X-Files premiered.
Yes. Oh yeah, so I watched the hell out of that too.
Yeah, I wanted to be Fox Mulder.
Yeah.
And every boy growing up that watched X-Files wants to be Fox Mulder. Some women too. That's fine.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Although the cigarette smoking man had all the secrets, and it seemed like, one, he could smoke and it didn't seem to hurt him, which I think would be awesome. Two, he knew everything, although he seemed very lonely. So
yeah, that's the trade-off. Mm-hmm. Knowledge equals loneliness.
Although Fox Mulder was very lonely too. He had no friends. He was always like throwing pencils at the ceiling, eating sunflower seeds.
Hanging out in the basement of the FBI.
Yeah.
That's a pretty sweet gig, honestly.
It sounds great. I would love it. I would trade it in a second for that.
Absolutely.
Hey, Steve, we're going to send you to Cleveland to go chase like a family of goblins in a weird barn. I'm like, that sounds great. Okay, cool.
Yeah, and if they decide to pay you for that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, man.
Do it for
free. Sign me up. Oh, dude, sign me up.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Steve. That's all I had, Laura.
Oh, no, I want to know more about Nebraska. Tell us something else besides the airship sightings.
Yeah, sure. So let me tell you my favorite. Rick, I think you're going to like this one. So this is one of my very favorite cases. But Keel and Jacques Vallée wrote about this too. But in 1957 in Falls City, Nebraska, which Falls City is on kind of the southern border between Kansas and Nebraska, but right on the east side of Nebraska, which the easternmost part, which the whole Missouri River runs up and down along it. So high strangeness happens next to rivers and it's mm-hmm. got all that kind of thing.
Okay.
But really, where in eastern Nebraska, from what I've researched the last few years, is where most of the historically the high strangeness takes place. So anyways, that was just a little, you know, primer before, a little appetizer before we get into this. But in 1957, a man named Mr. Hanks was driving his family back into Falls City. It's a very small little town. They were going to get groceries, and they drove back to the neighborhood. They parked. The kids and the mom are taking the groceries in, and Mr. Hanks goes to park the car on the street. Then his car starts behaving funny, and he's like, huh, that's weird. And he looks up in the air, and he sees like what looks like a very large bird. And he's like, wow, that bird is crazy big. And, you know, kind of goes, you know, trying to parallel park. His car is still like, you know, kind of turning on and off. Radio's going weird. We've heard this before. And he sees the bird, what he thinks is a bird, get quite a bit closer. And he kind of knows, like, that's not a bird. It looks sort of like humanoid looking. Then the thing circles around and starts having what looks like mechanical problems. It starts like, you know, flying around erratically. The wings are tilting all over the place. Then it gets closer and he realizes this is like a 9 foot tall winged humanoid that's got like tan leathery skin, bright blue eyes, and it is wearing like a shoulder harness, like an apparatus. So these wings aren't organic like a Mothman or your typical flying wing humanoid.
Yeah.
It is wearing like shoulder straps, which I think is like hilarious and awesome. And then on its chest, it has like a crude computer and dials. And this thing is like this demon thing is like turning dials, trying to course correct itself. And eventually it gets closer to Mr. Hanks. Mr. Hanks is out of his car now, walking away from it, but freezes, totally paralyzed. This thing gets low to the ground, starts sputtering, turns a couple more dials, then it course corrects and it flies off, and Mr. Hanks is no longer paralyzed. After this happened to him, this was not a good thing for him. Like he said, for the rest of his life, he couldn't really sleep, and he ended up taking a second job so he could avoid sleep, but it troubled him. He kind of said it ruined his life. He never felt the same, and he felt like he was basically describing like very traumatic PTSD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So even though like he's suffered trauma, I do love the story in the case because it's so
fuck
weird.
That guy.
Yeah, and I've never heard anything like it exactly.
No.
Like it's
no.
The fact that it was wearing like a demon wearing like a shoulder harness that was 9 foot tall. Like I'm like, that's really high strange and it weird. Is. And it's I love cases like that that are super absurd and unique. And so that one ticks the box for me.
This might be out of left field, but did you ever read Childhood's End by Arthur C. Clarke?
A long time ago, I sure did.
That kind of reminds me of it, because it was, you know, the aliens were basically our view of the devil. Like, they had horns, and they were red, and like that kind of thing. So
this guy was red?
No, it was tan.
Yeah. Okay.
It was like a leathery tan with bright blue eyes.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
And his wings were the same color?
The wing, I don't recall what the wings the color of them, but the wings were like not organic. They were like, it was like a short, he was wearing like what looked like leather straps.
Yeah.
So it was like someone put like a hang glider on.
He's so the Falcon thing, and Marvel. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's weird. So like really the thing, if you consider, since it wasn't organic, it's almost like that was the UFO.
Yeah.
The craft was the wings of the little computer on his chest.
And then that sends you down the rabbit hole was the populace there, was that what they were imagining aliens to be? It's that snake eating its own tail. It's
That's exactly right. The self-negating properties of all this stuff where, yeah, you know, like nuts. And that is the wonderful thing, especially about what I love about like 50s, 60s, 70s, even into the 80s, you know, UFO occupants or UFO nuts, is that they're never like the same. We're talking hundreds of different creatures. Yeah, and then the 80s, during the Cold War and the Reagan years, things become more homogenized.
Which kind of,
he wasn't the first one to see the gray, but yeah, he definitely popularized the gray, you know, like that book is burned into everyone's head.
Right.
But yeah, it is interesting.
Rick's going to pull it out.
I've got it.
Pull it out, Rick.
He's going to pull the book out.
Ta-da!
Right there. Oh, yeah. Classic. There it is.
Yeah. Like that's iconic. That's what everybody sees.
Yeah,
from the moment this was released. That's what everybody sees now.
It's the archetype the phenomenon chose to show us for a while.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Right. Mm-hmm. What's it gonna be next? That's what I want to
know. That's what I'm excited for.
I don't want I don't want reptilians. I don't want
I'm not down with that either.
No. I want something different. I want squids.
Yeah.
I want the aliens from Arrival, or I want the sky whale from Nope.
Like oh,
kinds of oh yeah.
That's what I want.
I would love the flying beer cans in the, there was this great case in the 60s that Keel wrote about, but it was about these, like, this lady, like, drives her car into the road at night and sees, or it was a guy actually, and there's this giant, what looks like a giant rocket ship, like a crude rocket ship, and like a spotlight coming down. So he pulls his car over, gets out of his car, and then he sees a light come down and these three beer can looking aliens. With like little arms, and they're like really adorable. And he kind of lunges towards them, and then they like run at him, and he gets back in his car and takes off. But I'm like, show me a little beer can. I want it to be weird and cute.
Well, those are the things I almost believe more than your standard run of the mill UFO. Like
Vegetable Man and all those kind of things.
Yep.
Vegetable Man, your Flatwoods, your Indescribable Octoman.
Yeah.
Like all of those one off things, like Loveland Frogman right behind me. Like these things. Shout out to Easton Hawk, by the way, for that art. But, you know, those are the things I find the most intriguing, because anybody can just say they saw a Bigfoot or an alien. Like, you come up with these weird things that have nothing else correlates to it, then it seems more genuine to me.
I'm totally with you.
Yeah, cool.
And I know that's weird logic to people who aren't into this stuff. You know what I'm saying? I try to explain, like, to friends or other people who, like, have a very mild interest in these topics, when I talk about the weirder cases like this, they're like, well, that's the bullshit ones. I'm like, I think the opposite, man. Like when people start describing, like, well, I met an alien from Zebel Ganubi and they said they're part of a galactic federation, I'm like, I'm out. You know, like when it sounds too organized and like narrative from Star Wars or Star Trek, I'm like, I'm interesting story, and I just kind of back away slowly. You know, it's just not for me.
Yeah, right there with you. Like, I think Pascagoula was one that I loved.
I love Pascagoula.
It's just so unique.
I totally believe those guys believed what they were saying. I really do.
That's really what it is. It's not necessarily that what they said happened. It's that they believe that it happened.
Yeah,
that's kind of where I come from.
And if that is true, that is so compelling. Like, how could two people have a shared detailed experience. And both, like, I mean, these are guys who were not even, like, you know, very educated. Like, they were able to convince people for 50 years with their wonderful Oscar nominated acting abilities. Mm-hmm. That they, I mean, like, I just, that seems more unbelievable to me that these mm-hmm. guys pulled off a hoax, you know, like,
right.
Well, but the most compelling part of that, the thing that I point to in that case in particular is the fact that when the cops were out of the room, the two of them were discussing uh-huh. together what they experienced. It wasn't, oh, I think we fooled them. It's they were both traumatized.
Yeah. Right.
And what do they have to gain? Like,
exactly. They didn't gain anything. It ruined their lives.
And especially back then, it always did, you know?
Yeah. Like, well, like Lonnie Zamora too, with his case.
Absolutely.
He went from sheriff to a gas station attendant. Like,
the Lawndale bird attack, like the huge bird that picked up the kid in Illinois, like that screwed him
up.
That
kid grew up to be Laura Crim.
Yep.
There you go.
Yep. And I mean, we, you know, like I, as we're talking about this, all these different cases of people's lives being upended keep on flooding through my head. So there is such a, while this phenomenon is wonderful to study with, like it is like a thing you got to be careful with because like it doesn't, it seems like a lot of people really, the trauma is so great that it does not seem like you'd want this to happen to you. Even though I feel like I would, like, but you know, a big game, but.
Yeah. Is the knowledge worth the trauma? You got to weigh the scale.
I know. It's true. It's true.
I'm already traumatized enough, so I'll take the knowledge.
You're good. Yeah.
Give me that knowledge.
Get abducted, Rick.
Insane. Yeah. I will.
Take one for the team, Rick.
If anybody's listening, come get me.
I mean, this would be a legendary episode if we watched Rick get a white light just fills the room. And Rick.
At least it was recorded.
Yeah,
I joke. Like, if I ever see Bigfoot, I'm gonna run after him. And if I be the guy, if I'm the guy that's killed by Bigfoot, I'm gonna be that guy. If that's what it takes,
it'd be a great way to go out.
Exactly, my name would echo through history.
Yeah, what's better, dying of old age or dying from getting like dismembered by a Bigfoot? I'll take Bigfoot dismemberment.
And I think that'd be a quick death.
I think so too. I would hope if they toy with you, it's like kind of some kind of Saw movie. That would be a scenario. Maybe I wouldn't sign up for.
You're gonna get breastfed by one of them.
Yeah,
I'm okay with that.
Fine, yeah. Mother me.
I need the nutrients. I need the colostrum. I need the Bigfoot colostrum to help me grow.
That I have to address this because Laura, you bring up something interesting. Now it was just Bob Gimlin's birthday about five or six.
He has the same birthday as me.
Yeah. Oh, no kidding.
He's 92 and you're 92 as well. So you look great.
91. Almost there. You almost had it. But you're in good company. But wait, what was I going to talk about? Yeah. So everyone, you know, that's obviously the most famous cryptid footage ever, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And I think it's really good footage. I actually am compelled by it.
Same here.
But everyone kind of agrees that there are female in anatomical body
memory
parts. Thank you.
Welcome.
And but if you notice, if you turn on any Bigfoot show, or if you go to any Bigfoot lecture and you hear people talk about Bigfoot, 98% of the time they say he.
Yeah.
Right.
He. Mm-hmm. Where there is such a male gender assignment to Bigfoot, and I'm not trying to sound like, you know, woke Bigfoot, but like, you know, it is something that is interesting to me because the most popular Bigfoot of all time is Patty.
It's Patty, yeah,
who is clearly a female, at least looks to be a female to our eyes and how we understand biology. But everyone says he, where I'm like, well, for all I know, they're all she's, and they're just a she species.
A she species. Was that the unofficial sequel to Species back in
It didn't make it to actually shooting. The script had problems.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Well, no, I think with the Bigfoot community in particular, people who are into that tend to be gun-toting, camo-wearing white men. Yeah. And that's what they project onto it. They're looking for they're looking for the Jack Link Sasquatch, not the dumpy dump truck heavyset Patty. They're looking for big shoulders, tiny waist.
Yep.
Bigfoot I don't like. I like Patty.
Yes, I did like a 5-minute kind of joke bit stand-up thingy in a lecture I gave like not that long ago or before Iowa. And I said that, like I made this point and like, you know, the women and the young people in the audience were like clapping like, yeah. And then there was like a lot of white dudes who were like crossing their arms, like looking at me like, this piece of shit. Like, what's this guy talking about? And I'm like, I was trying to be funny and like make a joke. And they were like so incensed that I would like, you know, like mess with their perception of what Bigfoot is. And to them, it's a dude. It's a big, strong dude. And I'm like, is it though, bros? Like, I mean, come on. Patty is clearly a girl. A pretty
She's
little girl.
She's got a dump truck that won't quit.
Absolutely. She's beautiful. Yeah. I love her.
She is beautiful. Exactly. I bet she'd be great to spoon with. Just give you the little spoon.
I love her.
Yeah, very comforting.
Yep. Yeah. Major bed.
Yeah. All right, Steve, you ready for some rapid fire questions?
Talk to me, sister.
There are incorrect answers, by the way.
This is so much fun. You guys ask good questions. I'm having a good time. Thank you.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. Well, everything you said was wrong.
Who was your first celebrity crush?
Ooh, you might have met them.
Oh my God, that is such a great question. I'm going through TV and movies right now because I'm trying to think of who. Sorry. I'm going to say probably Blair from Facts of Life.
Nice.
Yeah, solid. I remember being very little and watching that after school, like at the reruns, and just thinking she was so cute. So yeah, probably Blair. Pretty boring answer.
No, like for me, it was like Winnie Cooper on Wonder Years.
Yeah, so, you know, she wasn't my first, but she was up there, you know?
Yeah. Like, we had Topanga. Who else did people say?
Oh, yeah. Boy Meets World.
Yeah.
Well, Sigourney Weaver in Ghostbusters was...
Hell yeah.
So, yeah. Still, to this day.
Yeah.
40 years later.
She's great.
Oh, yeah.
I take that back. It was Marion from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
There we go.
That was definitely my first crush.
And Karen Allen.
Yeah. Karen Allen. She's... I love her. I love her.
She's the heart and soul of the movie Scrooged.
Oh, she's great in everything she ever was in. Starman, great movie. Boom.
Yep.
Absolutely. We love her.
Rick, is Steve one for one so far?
He is. Good answers. Good answers.
Thanks, Rick.
You're welcome. I know you need my approval.
I do. I want it. I seek it.
All right. What world record do you think you have a shot at beating?
Most spaghetti consumed in a 24-hour period.
Damn.
Details.
I'm pretty good. I love pasta. A lot of times I will like work out extra hard and like avoid carbs for like a day just before I like eat spaghetti because I can't eat just a little bit. I have to eat like a metric ton.
How many Olive Gardens have you put out of business?
Buddy, a couple. I'm not. Olive Garden is good, man.
The salad
is so good. Their salad dressing is absolutely phenomenal.
It's if we ever do like delivery from Olive Garden, like get me the big salad. I just want the salad. Like,
it's the salad. The salad's really the best part.
It really is. I agree. Oh,
now I'm hungry.
Two so far. Good answer.
Yeah, thanks, Rick.
You're welcome.
All right, Steve. What movie do you enjoy quoting the most?
Probably Blue Velvet.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Was that the Dennis Hopper?
Yeah, Dennis Hopper, Isabel Rossellini, Tom McLaughlin.
Okay. My God. That's a deep pull you had there.
Yeah, well, it's one of my favorite movies. I love it.
I expect you to say like Anchorman.
Step Brothers, yeah, that's what people
say. The odd thing about me is that like most of my almost all of it, my work has been in comedy, yet I consume very little comedy. I'm not like a comedy dork. Yeah. I like really like serious dark things, which is like ironic. But actually a lot of my friends who are like comedians, like they don't watch comedy.
No.
I think because you do it, you pull more comedy material off like pain and suffering.
Yeah. Well, anybody who's a comedian comedians are really good at drama just because they have, I'm not a comedian by any means, but I like to be funny.
Yeah.
And you pull a lot of humor from darkness. So you're spot on with that.
Yeah. It's weird, but it makes sense.
Yep. Absolutely. 3 for 3. Good job.
All right. Next one. Do you consider a hot dog a sandwich?
No.
Why?
I don't know. Because as I said, no, I'm like, but is it a sandwich?
Is it?
But my gut instinct says no, but I feel like I might be wrong about that. I'm not confident in that answer, I'll be honest.
No, you're right. And the thing, this wasn't my idea, so I'm not taking ownership, but I agree with it. Someone, I can't remember who it was, we'll have to go back through the archive.
Yeah,
someone said, "Is you take a hot dog and you can insert that hot dog into anything. And at a certain point, the thing you insert the hot dog into becomes a hot dog because you have inserted the hot dog. So somebody posted a picture of a piece of pizza with a hot dog on it and tagged me in it and said, is this a hot dog? And I'm like, yeah, that's a hot dog now.
Well, it has that art. I feel like Laura should be the tiebreaker because since you are close to Chicago, and Chicago is probably the most famous hot dog city in the entire world, which do love a Chicago dog.
Yeah.
What is your opinion on that?
She hates pepperoncinis. That's her opinion.
No, I love them. No.
Let's start a fight.
A hot dog is not a sandwich.
Okay. I think your ruling on that makes it correct.
Yep.
Thank you.
You're welcome. For nothing.
Thank you. Okay. Toilet paper, over or under?
Oh, like pulling it.
Yeah.
Over.
That's correct. Over. Because if you do it under, I believe people who do it under have more psychopathic tendencies. CEOs of major corporations.
Yes, they're all under. Paper
under.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I think Hitler did his toilet paper under. So it's one of those things.
I'm with you on that.
It's the correct answer.
Yeah, 4 for 4. This is huge.
Yeah. You can put this in your journal tonight.
I mean, I'm very excited about it. I cannot mess this up.
All right. Last question. What is your favorite breakfast food?
This is tough.
I mean, like, it's, you know, because there's two different kinds of, like,
eggs.
Well, you know, I want to be specific, right? Because I feel like saying eggs is too general. But, like,
yeah, it's basic.
If I'm, like, at a nice high-end breakfast place, it's like a special breakfast. Ooh, I would maybe say a Eggs Benedict with lox. But 9 out of 10 times, the breakfast that pleases me the most is a breakfast burrito, a really well-made one.
What's in it?
Eggs. Crispy taters, plenty of cheese, maybe some kind of like really like fancy, really thoughtful, like, you know, hot sauce or, you know, like salsa, but not too much salsa. I don't want it too watery, but I definitely want like a sauce that's hot that binds it all together. And, you know, like maybe some kind of breakfast meat, anything will do, but that is not necessary to have a breakfast meat in there. Yeah. My God, I am so hungry now. Holy shit.
I feel you. You're talking to somebody who just ate a burrito on the toilet earlier because I was so hungry. So preaching to the choir, buddy.
Yeah, you did.
I lowered myself. Multitask. But no, while you're in Nashville, Steve, go check out Big Bad Breakfast.
Big Bad. Okay.
Yeah. I have not had a chance to try it yet, but Dave Stone, the comedian, he loves Nashville food and he always recommends that. So try
it. Hell yes. Okay. I will. I love these kind of tips.
Yes. I love food.
I'm so excited about this hot chicken. You have no idea. I'll take pictures and send to you guys.
Please. Yeah.
Just meet them up for hot chicken. You guys go together. Yeah, you should.
I'll probably go Friday. I'll let you know. And if you're available, you can meet me.
Friday? I should be pretty good.
Yeah.
I think.
Do it.
Dude, let's do it.
Okay. You got it, man.
Yeah.
Hot Steve, chicken, thanks baby. So much for being on the show. Yeah.
Thanks for having me, y'all. This is a lot of fun.
Where can people find yourself?
They can find me on... So I guess my social media is Bergmaster5000, and that's kind of, I guess, Twitter and Instagram. And then I do have a podcast you can find on Apple and Spotify, and that is Strangeness. And that is a show about weird stuff.
Yeah. And when does that come out?
I usually release them either Tuesday, Wednesday, sometimes Thursday. It's a little all over the place, but it's definitely
whenever you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're in control.
I've been getting them out every week so far, you know, 20 weeks in a row. So I'm going to try to keep on doing that. But it's hard.
It is hard.
It is.
You got to take a dark week every once in a while for your mental health.
Every once in a while. But like I'm sitting on a bunch of episodes right now, so I feel good about that. So now I can actually take a little break from recording. But this has been a lot of fun. It's so fun to be a guest on podcasts. I love it.
Yeah.
I don't have to do the work. It's so great.
Exactly. Well, we have to do the work now.
Yeah, you do.
Rick, where can people find us?
Damn, we're on Facebook, Instagram, X, formerly Twitter. We got a Big Cartel shop. We got a Redbubble shop. And I'll be at Crypticon. We're sponsoring that. Are you going to a Crypticon, Laura? Are you going to try to make it, maybe?
Probably not.
Steve, are you going to
Crypticon?
Where and when?
It's Lexington, Kentucky in November. November 18th.
19th. I can't do it. I'm like done for the year in terms of... Because I go to Nashville next week, and then I can't really... I have stuff to do until the holidays.
That's a bummer.
I know it is.
Well, bummer. I'll print out a picture of your face and carry it around with me.
Please do. Oh, that would mean a lot to me.
Oh, should I? I should do that. Just take pictures. Yeah.
We will be at Frogman Fest in March next in March. Year in Ohio.
That I would love to go. That's in Loveland.
Yeah.
I wonder how far that is for me.
It's not terribly far.
Come meet me and we can ride together.
Is that in the eastern part of the state, you know? or the Western?
It's Western. It's Southwestern.
That's yeah, good Southwest. For me. That's yeah. very yeah. good for me.
It's close. Yeah.
It's
close
basically there. Directly north from Nashville.
Have you all ever been to that one?
Yeah, last year.
Yeah, we went last year.
Mm-hmm. Is it like the same size as Van Meter, Laura?
It's bigger.
Really?
It was huge.
Maybe it's I huge. Will come to that one because that sounds like so much fun. I wish yeah. I was there right now.
Yeah, yeah. We all do.
Okay, so drive through Chicago. We'll get some hot dogs. Okay. And then we can ride together to Ohio. How's that?
That sounds like a great plan. Sounds like a great plan.
Okay.
So you I'm committed down. To it on air. Now you have to.
Now I got to do it.
You're stuck.
You're stuck, baby.
Can't walk it back now.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much. And we'll be talking to you.
All right. Have a good one, y'all.
Bye.
Bye.
Peace.
Thanks for listening. You can find us on all the socials and check out our merch on Redbubble and Big Cartel. Don't forget to sign up for our Patreon. Bye. I can't believe my mom and these two idiots made it to season 2. Bye-bye. Adios, amigos.